This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here talking with Becky Sykes from the Regenta Viticultural Foundation. How are you, Becky?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris. Lovely to be here.
Excellent. You are the program director for the charity Regenta Viticultural Foundation, and you've got a number of people on your board, some very famous people like Justin Howard-Snaid.
Yes, we have indeed. There's Justin. There's also Stephen Cronk of Domaine Mirabeau in Provence. And we have Mimi Castile, who's a very renowned grower from Oregon, who is knows a lot about microbiology. Alistair Nesbitt of Vinescapes, who would be quite well known in the UK and great.
Yeah, we've had him on the show quite a bit about his weather patterns and frost management.
He is fantastic, actually. I have to say, he is very, very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Yes, really good, really good. And I won't list all the trustees, otherwise we'll be here forever. So, yes.
Cool. What I want to talk about today is some of the nitty-gritty about what you do in Regenta Viticulture, and talk about some of the key aspects or some of the controversial elements to it. You did say last week that Regenta Viticulture was all about building up the organic material in the soil to help the biodiversity and improve biodiversity in the vineyard, which is bang in line with UK government's sort of proposals recently. There's farmers in Wales up in arms because they're supposed to plant trees on 10% of their land, and they're going, what's my productivity going to happen? And getting quite upset by it all. But let's talk a bit about sort of I think there's probably three aspects that we might touch on. One is fungicides. One's herbicides, one's water retention, it's four aspects, and the last one is maybe ploughing and those issues. I think they're all quite important issues.
Yeah,
so let's start with ploughing, because ploughing was something that a lot of producers think is a good thing, you know, especially when you're running up and down the field every day in your tractor, the soils get quite compacted. So ploughing is a way of maybe tilling some of the cover crop, but also getting aeration and lifting the soils. But you guys seem to think it's a bad thing.
Ideally, you wouldn't disturb the soil at all. So that's the ideal starting point. So from there, that's because you don't want to release any of the carbon that's in the soil, and you don't want to disturb the mycorrhizal fungal networks that are in the soil. So that's the starting point, is that's the ideal. You don't till. And it's one of the tenets of regenerative agriculture. But the reality is that sometimes you do have to do some of this work. So in terms of compaction, obviously the less you drive your tractor up and down, the better. But nobody does recreational ploughing. Actually, that's not true. There are ploughing competitions near me. So that's not actually true at all. Farmers generally don't want to do recreational ploughing. They don't want to drive up and down their tractors any more than they need to. Diesel's expensive. So you're right, though. You do get compaction in the where the wheels go, what we call the wheelings, and that does need to be subsoiled sometimes. And what you would then do in regenerative viticulture is you would try and address that once and then change your practices so that you're then not compacting it as much as you were before. So we're not saying you can't cultivate your soil at all. What we are saying is we want to minimize that, and we want to look at practices that can help people minimize that, because some people find it's actually okay not to cultivate in the alleys between the rows, in the interrow. They can cope with planting cover crops or something like that and not having to plough or do anything there. They find it more challenging under vine for various reasons, and they don't want the weeds under vine to grow up into the canopy. So they have to come up with a solution for that. And for some people, very shallow tillage is the preferred solution. We're very pragmatic in regenerative viticulture. You know, whatever works for the individual farmer in their context is clearly the best thing to do. You know, it's Jamie Good calls it intelligent farming. So It really is just trying to do the best thing that you can at that time.
Yeah, that's why I like that sustainable viticulture is different countries have different issues. For example, if you're a wine grower in Australia, water is quite an important element. Whereas if you're a grape grower in Wales, water is the last thing you want more of. So there are different requirements in different regions.
Definitely, definitely. And there's a really cool grape grower in Wales who has his vines growing up willow trees. He uses willow trees as his trellis instead of
traditional. That's very traditional.
Very traditional. He calls it his arbustrum. And so willow trees are great because they soak up a lot of water. They often, if you think, weeping willows often grow along a riverbank, don't they? So they're really good at soaking up the water. Yeah, he's a really cool guy, actually, I have to say.
Do you know, just an offside, what's his name?
His name's Paul Rolt, R-O-L-T, and his vineyard is called Hebron, H-E-B-R-O-N.
We won't worry about those strange trellising techniques used, but very traditional, because that's what vines want to do, is they want to climb up trees. They're climbers by nature, but it must be hard to do your winter pruning.
Well, I think you have to prune both at the same time. You have to prune the willows as well as prune the vines, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. But agroforestry is a really, really growing. Sorry, we're just not talking about growing trends because of the cliche. But there's lots of people experimenting with planting trees literally in their vines. So there are some people in France who, in fact, it's quite a progressive thing in France to do at the moment, is to not just take out vines or rows of vines and replace them with rows of trees, but actually, I know one person who's in just literally planting them in between the vines, because the idea is that the tree's roots go so far down that they store a lot of water. So when you get a high precipitation event, they store lots and lots of water really deep down that they can then bring up, and you get a lot of evapotranspiration in the summer. So it kind of changes the microclimate in the summer and reduces air temperatures around the grape canopy and shades the fruit, obviously. You wouldn't necessarily find the same thing useful in the UK where we need the sun and not the shade. But
yeah,
as you say, context specific, isn't it? Yeah.
Definitely. So let's go back to ploughing. We said that you encourage people not to plough, although there's no hard and fast rules. And something that I'm sort of aware of is that ploughing is quite... it releases a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. From a global warming point of view, the less ploughing you do, probably the better anyway. But you're only saying don't plough because you want to hold on to the carbon in the soils to build up that organic matter.
Well, also because you don't want to release it into the atmosphere, no, for exactly the same reason that you said. I mean, essentially, you just want to minimise ploughing as much as you possibly can. But sometimes it's essential, and we really do want to be pragmatic about this. So if someone wants to grow cover crops in the alleys between their vines, there are some people try and do that by what they call direct drilling, which means you have an attachment on your tractor and that cuts a slit in whatever's already there, drops the seed in, drops a bit of non-synthetic fertilizer in behind it, closes the gap up again, and hopefully that will take. But some people find that that's, you know, that there's a bit of a risk with that. They might not take, there might be too much competition from certain pesky weeds that are still there if you've got a lot of thistles or something. So some people will cultivate and then sow their cover crops. You know, we're not going to say that that's the wrong thing to do ever. We like to meet people where they are and suggest things that can kind of help them move that next step along their kind of regen journey.
Okay, let's talk about one of my pet peeves, which is fungicides in particular, because obviously you're trying to improve the microbiome of the soils, and we want to keep the fungi off the grapes. So you'll end up applying fungicides to the vineyard quite regularly. There must be a risk that those fungicides will interfere with the microbiome in the soils.
Yes, is the short answer. It is a real problem. So if you look at fungicides are a huge problem for grapes because they're a perennial crop, the vine. We don't move it. It stays there for hopefully 50 years. You know, often it's a lot shorter and some places it's longer. But so you get the disease, it gets into the vine, it kind of stays there and it overwinters the inoculum. So it is really difficult to get rid of these diseases, and they come back year after year. So synthetic fertilizers are systemic, they work within the vine. But yes, when you spray them, there are things people do that kind of reduce how much falls on the soil. They have these recirculating tunnel sprayers that catch what we call the drift, and it gets recirculated. But some does get onto the soil, and you're absolutely right, Chris. It does kill, you know, it's an extra blow to the fungi in the soil. So if you've chopped them up a bit with ploughing, and then you've dumped some fungicides on them, then you know they're not going to be very happy, are they? So, you know, and in organic growing, where they don't allow synthetic fungicides, copper sulfate is often used. And the problem with that is that gets washed, one gets washed off in the rain, goes onto the soil, but also it doesn't break down once it's in the soil. And if you look at a map of copper residues on the soil in France, it completely maps onto the wine regions. And fungicides are so widely used that in France, there's a statistic that I think 3% of farmland is vineyards, but they account for 20% of pesticides. And of those pesticides, 80% are fungicides. So, you know, it's disproportionate how much is put onto grapes. You're absolutely right.
Are there some fungicides that are better than others? You said that copper sulfate washes off, and it is. It goes on, and if you get a rain the next day, that's too late. You're going to have to apply it again, which is both expensive and very, very wasteful. But there are some fungicides that are, I don't know if the word, it's not contact, it's where they actually soak into the leaves and get
That's the
into it.
systemic ones. Yeah, systemic. So, and actually, what happens with fungicides is there are new developments year on year, and there are things you can add in that help. And I mean, you can reduce how much you use, and there are things that help to stick to the leaf. And I'm not a fungicide expert. You'll have to get an agronomist on for that one, I'm afraid. There are lots of developments, and there are now, you know, people developing kind of biopesticides. Fungicides are a big issue, and we don't have a silver bullet for fungal diseases, unfortunately. What we're looking at, there's some research just starting to come out, some evidence just starting that's beginning to show that having a really good functioning ecosystem kind of upregulates the vine's own response to some fungal diseases. But that's a long way off yet. That would be what we would hope. But actually, the reality is that fungal diseases are an issue. So, and it's the other reason that we're really pragmatic, because for some people who are really purist about regenerative viticulture, they might say, well, I'm not going to spray anything at all. But, you know, if they get hit really badly by powdery mildew or downy mildew, then they might not actually be able to take a crop. So we want to be pragmatic. That's what we're about, so that people do the best that they can.
I'm going to hopefully talk to a friend of yours, Sam, about peewee, the new sort of hybrid vines that are coming out. There are vines out there that are much better at being resistant to fungi. So is that sort of thing popular within regenerative viticulture?
It's starting to be, because it's difficult. In some of the French appellations, for example, you don't really have a choice about the varieties you grow. So for some people, it's not an option. In Germany, it's really becoming quite popular, I would say. And there are some varieties that, you know, some of the wines are really, really good. And in fact, Sam, I hope he sends you some so you can try some. But the really good thing about those is that instead of having to spray fungicides on them kind of upwards of 10, 15 times, you could probably get away with two. They're not completely 100% resistant. And they've got a long German name, but the abbreviation is peewee. So the idea is that by planting these, you can really massively reduce the amount of fungicides that you use. Yeah, but I don't think the market is necessarily moved on to that point yet.
I had a quick chat to Sam earlier in the week, and he was talking about some of the varieties like Cabernet Noir and things like that. And at least they sound like a grape variety you might be able to pronounce. Now, sometimes some of the old hybrids were pretty awful.
So I think Pinotin is a really lovely one, and Cabernet Noir is really, really good one. I think that's probably my favorite. And I've tried quite a few of them now. So yeah, I think hopefully they will take off as people realize that this is the solution to one of the real problems of fungal disease. And hopefully that's what will happen. So their fingers crossed, that's what happens.
I think in France it's against the law, isn't it, to use hybrids in Appellation Control their wines, although they bend the laws every now and then, say, oh, it doesn't really count because it's such a small amount of, say, some other non-vitis vinifera grape variety in that, that it will count it as a vitis vinifera.
So. Yes, and that's quite interesting, actually. And someone I was talking to in Australia was saying that actually an approach could be that in a lot of rules, you're allowed to put 15% of something different in. You have to have 85% of whatever it is, Chardonnay or whatever, but you're allowed to put 15% in of something else. I had someone did suggest to me that if we always use that 15% as a peewee variety, then we would have a really big reduction in the fungicides used. Yeah, maybe that's the campaign to take. I don't know.
I think the 85% is mainly for non-appellation stuff, like for geographical indicators or protected geographical indicators. So in Australia, all their stuff, America's AVAs, and IGP, IGT in Europe. Anyway, let's move on. So you mentioned we've done fungicides, herbicides, because obviously herbicides are designed to kill plants.
They are designed to kill plants, but they do also have quite a bad effect on the soil microbiome. And Mimi Castile, our trustee, has done some fantastic talks on the impact of herbicides. What they do is they lock up specific nutrients and stop them being accessible to the vine. Herbicides like glyphosate, they do lock up. It's called chelation because they look a bit like the shape of a crab. And so they chelate certain nutrients that then aren't available to the vine. It stops the kind of ecosystem working in the soil. So herbicides have been used as, especially under vine in that strip. So if you want to not have your weeds growing up into your fruiting wire, then you have come up with a solution for how you control your weeds. So weed control is quite a big subject of discussion. So you could have, like in the UK, we have a lot of grass under vine because we're quite damp and green. And so you could go through with a strimmer attached to your tractor. You could just strim down the grass because we've got enough vigor. Everyone's quite happy with that. You could have sheep in your vineyard to cut the grass. But in most of the world, people prefer to only do that when the vines are dormant, because once you've got leaves on the vine, then the sheep do quite like to eat the leaves. So people have come up with all sorts of solutions to that. There's a guy in the States who has very high trellis wire, which means that he can have his sheep in the vineyard all year round because the sheep can't reach the leaves. And actually, when the shoots grow long enough, it's quite good because they nibble the ends, which stops it growing any longer. Some people use baby doll sheep, which are very tiny, and then there's all sorts of other things that people have tried. And in New Zealand, obviously, people have sheep in the vineyard a lot, don't they?
Kunikuni, I think there's Kunikuni pigs, isn't it, or something like that?
Yes, pigs are great. Tiny little baby pigs.
They produce a lot of nitrogen.
So animals are one way of doing it. Strimming or mowing is another way of doing it. Mulching, so if you go through and you mow what's in the rows, so in the interrow between the rows, and you had a side discharge mower, you could discharge your mowings under vine, essentially, as a mulch. Mulches are quite good. And then you get to the two options that aren't great, one of which is herbicide and the other of which is cultivating under vine. So again, pragmatic approach. The ideal is that you're not going to either use herbicide or cultivate, but the reality is that you do what is best for your vineyard context.
Going forward, one of the things that's been revolutionary recently is AI. And AI can identify things such as weeds as opposed to vines. And we're not far away from having robotic herbicide managers, if you like. It goes around and goes, that's a thistle, and it just does what it needs to do to the thistle to get rid of it.
I love that idea. I want one in my garden. I don't know. I've not heard of the robotic weeders yet. And we have to mention that a weed is only a plant in the wrong place. You know, if you don't try to kill off everything, what happens is you get quite healthy competition amongst your weeds, and none of them generally, hopefully, get too big. Whereas there has been some evidence that if you go through and you herbicide, what comes back is the real kind of
Nuts.
Yeah, the really tough ones, the docks, the thistles, the really, really tricky ones to get rid of. And the same with cultivating under vine, even shallow cultivation. You're kind of killing off those ones with the little roots, but those big ones, they come back and then they're really taken over because there's no competition from the smaller ones. I mean, it is quite a complex discussion. Someone's come up with a way of electrocuting the weeds. This
Oh,
is
that's
quite
nice.
interesting. So I've seen this machine. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it though. So this machine's it's pulled behind the tractor. So you've got a bit of decompaction because it's quite heavy as well. And it's basically like I think a mini generator that just has these paddles, these flappy paddles that go along and they electrocute the. I mean, I don't know how they don't electrocute the worms. I've no idea.
Yeah, I bet they do.
Yeah, so quite interesting. But it's interesting that people are trying to come up with solutions constantly, and it's and maybe the robot is the solution that's going to stop people from herbiciding or cultivating.
Okay, Becky, I think that's quite interesting looking at sort of things like fertilizers, herbicides, and trying to store the carbon. I think next week we're going to look at a couple of things. We'll look at a little bit about water retention, certification, and maybe a little bit about biodiversity as well.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers.